So here I have that we should talk about the new call bandwidth numbers that I sent out a couple of days ago, and also the memory bandwidth, and discuss what those numbers mean. And the other thing is discuss the findings, Ricardo's findings, where he found that probably our traces are not that far from what we should have, right? I mean, we're a little bit off in numbers of accesses, but not very far.
Can you talk about that?
And the last topic I wanted to discuss was how to calculate power based on traces, rethink that.
Okay.
So, so I guess first of all, So I would like to discuss how I calculated the call bandwidth numbers and also the bandwidth numbers, because there are different ways of calculating this. So what I was doing is to, in the case of the call bandwidth numbers, is to divide the trace. No, sorry. I run the trace in the simulator, right? And then I get a log of page faults that trace is generating, right? By using LRU and so on. So with that list of page faults, that list includes the timestamp at which that page fault occurred, right? So with that timestamp, what I do is to divide that new page fault trace, I divide it in periods of 10 milliseconds, right? And then I calculate the bandwidth by have the number of page faults divided by the time, which is 10 milliseconds, and then I obtain the megabytes per second.
You assume each page fault is 4 kilobytes?
I assume each page fault is 4 kilobytes, because that's exactly what I'm assuming in the simulator. Right? I mean, in the simulator, I have heat in 4K pages. So.
Right. And I think that's fine. Akshay, do you have any comments about that, about the call bandwidth calculation?
Sorry, yeah.
So, depending on whether you have a page fault or you don't have a page fault, your execution time would change.
My execution time will change.
So assume two scenarios. One is when you have no page faults, and the other is when you have page faults.
Right.
So in the first case, you will probably have run much faster than the second case, right?
That's true.
So when we are calculating the page fault bandwidth, we are in some sense calculating a higher number than what would actually...
Yes, I think we're calculating a higher number because I'm not, to calculate these numbers, I'm not using the SSD. So my guess is that I am assuming an SSD time of zero.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that should be fine, I think. So as long as we are on the higher side, these numbers, I mean, are reasonably good for motivation. So should be okay.
Okay.
What about the memory bandwidth?
In the case of the memory bandwidth, I do exactly the same calculation, but instead of using 4K, I use 64 bytes.
There are no page faults, though?
No, because I'm just calculating the memory bandwidth. Right?
Okay, so each access is 64 bytes.
So, Luis, the number that, the 500 megabyte numbers, that's an average?
That's the average, but they were mostly, all the 10 millisecond period were mostly on the same range. It was 600 megabytes per second, more or less. Always. Almost always.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems a little high, especially for an older machine, right? Because, now you can have a memory bandwidth of about 2500 Mbps, but in an older machine, I think the 800 Mbps or something. So yeah, this seems a little higher. It's I guess we can live with it.
Well, I think that there may, should be some explanation. Trace
mm-hmm.
is with or without cache, do we know?
Well,
after the cache or
so the problem is that there are in that web page there are two versions of the same word.
Mm-hmm.
There is the cache version and there is the non cache version.
Okay.
And they call it cache enable and cache disable. But they don't really specify what cache enable and cache disable mean. So, you know, intuitively, it seems like cache enable is after caches,
mm-hmm.
right? In trace, and cache disable is before cache.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that the traces of cache disable are smaller, much smaller than the cache enable.
Mm-hmm.
For exactly the same word, right?
Mm-hmm. So is the execution time the same?
I haven't checked the execution time.
Did you calculate the bandwidth for the other guy?
No, I calculated the call bandwidth.
No, but the memory bandwidth.
By the memory bandwidth at the end.
Right, so those will be useful to have to understand what's going on.
Okay, yeah. My guess is that the other case will be much higher because there are many... much more accesses than the other one, right?
The other...
So it is...
Akshat, go ahead, please.
Yeah, is there a possibility that they somehow flip the two traces?
I mean, it could be.
Happen.
It could be, yeah.
That's possible that we're looking at all accesses in this space.
In this one? No, in this one I don't think so because, well, it could be, but the traces are more smaller than the other one.
Right, so which is why we need to see if they're the same execution time. And,
yeah.
Without that information, it's hard to...
We can check that, okay. But it's exactly the same workload, so... Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, the other interpretation, of course, could be that cache enabled means that caches are there and the cache disabled may somehow mean that they have somewhere figured out a way to switch off the cache or have a very small amount of cache working, so fill it up with something or...
Hmm. Now, is there a paper associated with this traces?
I think there is one. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think I saw one.
If there is a paper, it would be good to read at least the part where they describe the trace collection to understand what they might be doing. The other thing is about the 64-byte cache line assumption.
Right.
For that machine, it could be that the cache line was smaller. The machine that the Pentium 3 or whatever it was.
Yeah, it could be.
So that's something to check also. Because if it is 32 or 16, then the numbers look much more reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the next thing on the agenda?
So the other thing is about Ricardo's numbers.
Okay.
And, so I think basically what he did was to...
So let's have him...
Great, because we had much less, much fewer accesses, but after double checking, just said that it's pretty similar.
Mm.
So your real hardware also had an L3, right?
Yeah, well, the L3 is the one that has 6 megabytes.
6 megabyte L3, that seems very small for an L3. And what's your L2 size?
Well, actually, there are 4 cores, and each core has half a meg of L2. Yeah, it sounds really strange. Each call has half a meg of L2, and then there is a shared L3 of 6 megabytes. And it's true, it doesn't make sense, but we double check. The hard, I mean, the OS is telling us that it's 6 megabytes, and according to some specs we found on the internet, it's also 6 megabytes.
Okay.
So,
but yeah, it's really, it's kind of suspicious. It's really small for an entry, but
especially because 6 is not the right number. Had it been 8,
it still,
I mean, that's okay, right? So it has to be a power of 2 usually.
Yeah.
The other question I have is, so does this simulator model the cache latency? And because L3 would have a higher latency than...
No. No, it doesn't simulate anything with times. Just do stuff with write backs, write allocates, prefetching and all that, but it doesn't have various time.
Okay. So, I mean, does it assume that any cache hits would be like zero time, or it puts some default number?
Well, no, this one just records number of misses.
I think in our case it doesn't matter anyway. I mean, because we don't have the notion of time in our simulator, right?
Or cache.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that's right.
But this is quite surprising. I mean, even after an increase of 50% in the cache size and much higher associativity and improvements such as prefetching and write allocation, there is not a whole lot of difference. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that the cache is pretty much ineffective because it's all random.
Well, yeah, so that would mean that for some workers we could see more improvement. And actually, I'm running more workers right now to see what happens.
Okay.
So can we just, for sanity check, run some worker which we know is more or less sequential? Because for that, prefetching should really make a difference. Uh-huh.
I would suggest follow sequential. Right.
Yeah, no. I mean, the thing is that even if we have a lot of prefetching or less prefetching, I mean, we should have similar number of access to memory. And actually, with prefetching, we could have more access.
Right. So the prefetching accesses are counted as memory accesses.
Yeah.
Okay, so but that sort of explains if...
maybe if I disable prefetching, I could have less access to it.
But wait, so why do we need to count the prefetching accesses?
Excuse me?
Why do we need to count the prefetch accesses? Because I'm thinking about the... In terms of the hybrid memory point of view, there is no prefetching from the SSD or, you know, I mean, the operating system is not doing any prefetching from memory, right?
Well, it is, but not the operating system, the cache is.
Exactly, that's my point. In the case of the hybrid memory, we don't have control over that.
No, but what I'm saying is that even if prefetching was disabled, the number of access to memory we're seeing right now that includes prefetching should be pretty much the same or higher.
Higher? Okay, I see.
No, with prefetching, you probably have more reads, right?
Yeah.
No, yeah. What will happen is that, I mean, you don't have to disable prefetching. What you have to do is not to count the prefetching accesses.
No. I mean, if we don't count the prefetch accesses, it means that some access to memory are not being counted.
Exactly, but that's fine, because we in case of the hybrid memory, that doesn't affect hybrid memory.
That's a good point. I think that's a good observation. Because those will not incur page faults.
Yeah.
The prefetch accesses should not incur page faults.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah. So, okay, can report only number of on demand access.
Well, as well as what about write evictions? Can write evictions? The OS is not involved in those either.
Yeah, it's not involved in those, but those will increase latency, right? Because those have to be done synchronously.
Right, but do we consider the latency cost of memory? We do, right?
Yes.
And the latency, yeah, that's true. So if a write access or a read access leads to write eviction, then we have to count that as a memory access.
Yes.
But even so, I think we have to be careful there, because the write eviction should not cause a page fault.
Eviction shouldn't cause a page fault, right?
I mean, so now that means that, I don't know if it's a good idea to just eliminate those from the traces. I mean, just not considering prefetches and write eviction, or just use them in the simulator but in a different way, like those accesses don't have any. I mean, there are no accesses that have dependencies of those, for example.
Right. So what we could do is just
add a new field in the trace format that says, I don't know, prefetching or write eviction or something like that.
I think that's the correct thing to do.
Yeah. Let's do that. I mean, so that we have all the information and we can filter it in the post-processing stage, the ones that we don't want.
Yeah.
So let's do that. And in terms of...
Excuse me, go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking that this is kind of weird, because if the write evictions do not cause page faults, then no writes can cause page faults. Because all writes to memory are write evictions.
No, because the thing is that, I mean, it can cause page faults because you don't have that page in memory.
True, but the write eviction is transparent to the OS.
That's
because
true.
The OS does not have an address
That's
for that.
That's true, but you will, I mean, once you write to a page that is non-existent, you generate a page fault. And you will incur in some latency, right there. And then you write that at least to the cache, right? But, I mean, there is some latency.
Oh, I see. So to do a write, you might have to first read the cache line from memory. And that might cause a page fault.
Yeah, and in that case, the simulator is also prefetching that.
Yeah. This is not really prefetching, but this is demand loading the cache line on a write operation.
Yeah.
It's sequential writes to, I mean, let's say there is a pattern in the write. It prefetches the next line, so you don't need to actually read it and write it to the proportional.
Yeah, that's true. So the question is, how do writes create page faults for us? The writes that are, but we need to record writes.
Or how writes generate, how write page faults generate accesses to memory.
Right. I think there are, we need to make a differentiation between two things. One is a write, new write allocation, and the other is an overwrite. Is that possible?
Yeah.
Because new write allocations would go to memory because in the form of a read operation. Mm-hmm. So we need to mark those.
Yeah.
And well, overwrite.
Write allocation.
Yeah, let me finish. So new write allocations need to be captured in the hybrid memory trays.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are accesses to memory in the form of reading the cache line. And that may lead to a page fault or not. The second is the overwrites do not have to be part of the hybrid memory trays because they will always hit in the cache. Write evictions, I think, do not have to be part of the hybrid memory trays again.
I think they have to because, I mean, the only difference we need to take into account here is if it affects foreground operations or affects background operations. In the case of eviction, that's a foreground operation because before you can load the line, you need to evict the old one, right?
So, but that write eviction is not going to cause a page fault, though.
It's not going to cause a page fault, but it's an access to memory.
But in our case, it might. Is that possible?
Yeah, it could. It could generate a fault because
it should not generate a fault.
So my understanding is that the page faults doesn't have anything to do with the cache, but it has to do with the MMU, right? So the only condition you need to generate a page fault is that the reference to that address is not valid.
The write eviction is physical address, though. There is no translation.
Right, but you need to translate that first.
No.
In the hybrid memory system, both writes should go only to memory, and then the movement from memory to SSD should go in the background. Right? I mean, that write to SSD shouldn't affect latency. That should be done afterwards.
You're talking about the design of hybrid memory?
Yeah, just like what happens in regular storage systems or
MMUs
or everything, right?
I think we're doing that, but that's another discussion. So what I'm trying to see is...
I think that's an important but separate discussion.
Yeah.
Let's try to resolve the current matter, which is which writes do we register for page faults and non-page fault events in hybrid memory.
Right.
Okay, well, what I propose is to right now just focus on the format of the traces we want, something that captures as much information as we need later, and so we can continue tracing.
Hmm. I guess the only thing we need is an additional field, right? That says what the cache operation was. Prefetching, load, write, eviction, right?
The write eviction could happen on a read operation.
Yeah.
On a read from memory. So there are two different things.
In that case, we lost two things. Mm-hmm. We need to log the eviction as well as the read, right?
So
you have two access in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do we have physical address, virtual address?
Yeah.
So in this case, when we read and that causes a write eviction, we have two sets of physical addresses and two sets of virtual addresses.
Yes.
Yes.
Or at least the physical address for the write eviction.
I'm only logging writes to memory. If it's write to the cache, I'm not logging that.
Writes to cache, overwrites, you mean? Because write allocations, we need to log now that we understand what that...
No, but I think overwrites to cache, you don't need to log.
Right, overwrites are fine, but write allocations, which are also writes to cache, need to be logged.
I guess you need to log only those operations that are accessing memory somehow. Like eviction, prefetching, right?
Ricardo, are you noting these down, or... And so we don't forget.
Yeah. Well, I'm not writing it now, but I remember.
Okay.
But I don't see why we need to log access to cache, like a write allocate.
No. We're not saying that.
No, I'm saying that.
Oh, you're saying that. What?
Yes. We need to log write allocations because a new write will cause a read of the cache line from memory.
But then if it causes a read from memory...
That will could cause a page fault, and we need to know
that's
that.
That's fine, but if you read from memory, then that we will log that operation. Because there are two things in what you're saying. Write to the cache and read from memory.
Okay, so reading from memory is a physical read.
Yes.
Writing to cache is a virtual write.
Exactly.
Right? Or a physical write, I don't know. How does that work?
No, I think it's a physical write.
If it's a physical write, then...
The page faults are already generated.
Page faults could already be generated, so that could happen even for... could it happen for overwrites? Probably not. What about overwrites? Would a page fault be generated because of physical write?
No, I think we don't need to worry about page faults. At this point, all page faults are resolved. Because...
But if we don't have the memory address, how do we know whether a page fault occurred or not? So think about an overwrite. It's an overwrite using a virtual address.
Mm-hmm.
If that page is not in memory,
mm-hmm.
but somehow the contents are in cache, the cache line is in the cache, what will happen on the real machine?
It will generate a page
fault. That will generate a page fault.
Right.
So we have to log that.
But why do we want to log the page faults?
Why do we want to log the page faults? Isn't that the what we are simulating? I mean, if there is a page fault, we need to read from SSD?
No, but the thing is that at this point, we're assuming we don't have any SSD.
I know, but eventually the point of getting these traces is that so we can replay them
right,
on a hybrid.
Right, but the only thing we need are...
Hello?
Yes, hi Akshay.
Hello.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know. But I don't know if we need... Why do we need the page for?
Well, I'm not saying those are page faults. Those could cause page faults in the hybrid memory system. And if they can cause page faults in the hybrid memory system, we need to have a record of those accesses.
I see what you mean, yeah. I see.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the main reason is that these caches are not virtually addressed,
physically addressed. Correct. So even to get the physical address, we need a translation, and that may cause a page fault.
Yes.
Right. So let's do the following. Let's have a discussion offline,
mm-hmm.
Because it may run long. So Akshat, and we can give you a report over email.
Okay.
Yeah. Because
what makes things go? I mean, but now we have even more accesses than before that can cause a page fault. So we are even further from the goal than before, right?
Well, there may be some reductions. Right now we are doing the wrong thing, I think. But let's see what is the right thing first and then determine if we have more or less.
Okay.
I don't yet have a good understanding of what needs to be logged and what not. So we need to go through a discussion.
Okay.
Okay, so what is the other thing?
The other thing is, how do we calculate power?
Okay, so this is going back to sort of this last minute decision we made before the EuroSys deadline as to what were the alternatives for calculating power. And one thing which we eventually decided we should try is to use much smaller ranks so that we could control or vary the number of ranks with hybrid memory even for smaller footprints.
Right.
Even, you know, most of our footprints are small. So,
is that the source of the problem right now? I think that's probably the problem. Yeah.
Okay. So, I know that you had some other comments in terms of static versus dynamic power and how that changes when the ranks become larger and things like that.
Yeah, the thing is that there is a fixed amount of power that is drawn from the ranks, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this power is substantial when the system is idle, right?
A standby power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as we add more ranks, of course, or we make the ranks smaller, then we make the power consumption of the application much higher, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was, if I remember, this power consumption was very dependent on how many ranks we were using.
The standby power. What about the active power consumption? It is independent of the ranks. Or still dependent on the
ranks? I don't remember. I think we calculated at some point in some meeting. I think the assumption was that the standby power was more or less the same, and the active power varies a lot, independently on the rank size.
Okay, so let me rephrase the question. Let's say you have two ranks versus four ranks,
right,
the same size, total size.
Okay.
What is the active power and what is the standby power in these two configurations? I mean, is this higher in one case or lower in the other, or so on?
Okay, so the standby power is higher in the one we have more ranks.
Okay, so the standby power is dependent on the ranks?
Yes. And the active power, I think, is dependent on the bandwidth utilization.
Which is, if the workload is the same, then it will be the same regardless of the number of ranks.
Yes.
Okay, so that means that the number of ranks that we use for any workload is actually a significant decision. Because standby power dominates the advantage that hybrid memory provides.
Yeah.
Right? Active power in hybrid memory and the default and the vanilla system is the same. Would be the same, right? In fact, it could be higher in the hybrid memory.
In the hybrid memory. Most likely it would be higher. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, okay. So that's the situation with the power. So, okay, so we need to come to a resolution on what is a reasonable thing to do here.
Yeah.
So last time what we did was actually worked very much in our favor with small ranks.
Yeah.
I think.
Right? Yes, and what we did was scaling down the active power, I think.
The active power was the same, right?
Oh, we were scaling down the...
And we were scaling up the standby power by reducing the rank size.
Okay.
Right? Yes, Akshay.
So the traces that we have from the repository, do we have specs on the amount of memory used by the system?
The size of the footprint for the spec 2000.
For the spec 2000?
Yes.
Or the spec power?
The spec, the one.
No, the spec 2000.
PC.
No.
Do they have that information?
No.
Can we obtain that from the
system? Yeah, at some point calculated, but I didn't know the time. Because I needed for the combine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what I was wondering was if that trace is on a larger system,
mm-hmm.
let's say it's on an 8GB system, then we could use those traces as the focus point of the evaluation study. And then our problem could be solved, right? Because then we can easily talk of multiple ranks and reduce the number of ranks and so on. So.
I think the footprint weren't very very big.
Okay.
Yeah, they were on the order of hundreds of megabytes, probably. I mean, I don't know.
Same as what our workload
has. Yeah, no more than that. And those are all machines, so my guess is that it's not very, they didn't have much memory.
Okay, let's look at the numbers and see what they are. But I agree that it is unlikely there will be 8 gigabytes. Right. I mean, ideally we want something. What are the rank sizes about the DDR3? I remember we had a few options to choose from, right?
Yeah, so the rank size are 1 gigabyte, 2 gigabyte, and 4 gigabyte.
Gigabit.
Is it gigabyte or gigabyte?
No, byte.
Gigabyte, because...
It's maybe bits, but the rank at the end of the day is 1 gigabyte plus.
Right, okay. So, gigabyte rank.
Mm-hmm.
So we need workloads that are at least 4 gigabytes for us to do reasonable stuff.
Yeah.
So we can reduce to 25%.
The problem with that is that QMU doesn't behave very well once you use more than 2 gigs, I think.
Yeah, so that's why if we can use traces that are obtained from somewhere else, which are on larger memory, then the whole QMU will be bypassed, right? Because we are just going to run the trace on the emulator.
Right. Yeah, well, the problem is that it's not that easy to find such traces.
Yeah.
All system traces.
I guess otherwise we wouldn't, go on with the QMU stuff.
The other option could be to assume that we have multiple of these applications running together, which we discussed last time also, and have a merged trace through the emulator.
Right. The problem is that when we have merging, we might have overlapping memory accesses.
Okay.
Yeah, but that we should be able to solve, right? By just dividing the address space into, let's say, 8 different chunks and have 8 workloads. The original traces will just have to, remap the locations, right?
No, I'm not talking about the locations. I'm talking about the time of memory access.
Oh, okay.
What happens if 2 memory accesses are too close to each other, I guess?
That's the problem. To do something like that, we have to run these workloads at the same time within, let's say, independent processes or independent VMs on top of QMU so that we don't run into issues with simultaneous memory accesses.
Yeah, but then the problem is that we will duplicate the accesses to kernel, right?
That's true, but that's okay. But I mean,
that's
it's
okay,
a real
because it's that will happen in a. We can say that's some kind of multi-core system, right?
Yeah, I mean a virtualized system which run multiple VMs, right? And it's a QMU hypervisor.
Right.
Does that make sense or no? Actually, yeah, no. There will be another hypervisor inside, running inside QMU. So no. Can we run something like, can we run multiple VMs in QMU itself?
Ricardo? But then we still have the problem of the memory, right? That's the first problem anyway.
Oh. Multiple VMs inside QMU.
Yeah, but the thing is that we cannot increase more than 1 gig or 3 gig in QMU.
Right. Yeah, that is certainly a problem. But right now we are looking at 400 megabyte workloads. I think we can go up to 2 gigabytes at least. QMU is okay until 2 gigabytes.
But using... You mean...
So, I mean, even if we use VMs, we're still restricted to 1 gigabyte.
I see. So that restriction is 1 gigabyte.
Yeah. Actually, I think it's 1 and something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't think it goes all the way to 2.
Mm-hmm. Can we check if they have resolved this issue by now, or...
I mean, we can check, but. I know that I have the... Yeah, I guess we can check even in the mail list.
But that might require you to change a new QMU code base?
No, it's fine, because we are following the Git, the Git version. So,
oh, you
it's just
are.
A matter of updates. And all the changes will merge.
Okay. Unless they make changes in the same place.
Yeah.
Which is possible sometimes.
Yeah, but you think it's unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's try that, because I think the power issue cannot be very easily resolved otherwise if we cannot increase the size of our workloads, the footprint of our workloads.
Yeah.
Let's try that direction.
Okay.
At least for a week and see what happens.
Okay.
So, Ricardo, how easy it is to run multiple VMs in QMU within inside a single QMU instance?
But
for the other project for BRSS.
Right, so there is a single QMU instance and multiple VMs running, multiple OSs in OS inside the QMU.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Okay, so that's possible.
But I don't see how that helps. I mean, because we cannot go further than 1G anyway.
But that's another thing we are looking into, right? I mean, I'm just wondering if we are able to push it to...
Oh, I see. But we don't need VMs for that. I mean, we can just run...
Individual workloads?
Individual workloads.
But I thought our individual workloads were all small.
But we can run several of them, right? It's the same thing.
You mean inside as in multiple processes?
That's
not a typical workload.
It's not that it's the default size. On most workloads, we can change the working set size.
Okay.
I see. Well, in that case, we should be able to change existing working set sizes to be much bigger, right?
Yeah.
Because
didn't change any of those because we just used the default, but we could.
Yeah, I think we might have to eventually. If we want to do more realistic power measurements, more power calculations.
Okay, so right now I'm just in the process of retrace. So now, just to be precise, I change all the workers to trace to be as close as 1 gigabyte as possible and add a new field that says write eviction or prefetching and all that. Right?
Yes, and overwrites also may need to be traced.
Okay, and overwrites also. Okay.
So one more thing. You said that these, taking these new traces are really slow, right?
Yes.
Okay. How much slower?
For example, da capo on a real machine, da capo batik on a real machine takes 20 seconds. For me, with Dinero, it took 3 hours.
Mm. Okay.
And with the all caching simulator?
Couple of minutes, maybe 10 minutes, max.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's problematic too.
So, but if at the end of the day we see that Valgrind and Dinero are giving the same numbers, then we can probably go back to Valgrind. Once we run some differentiation.
Yeah, but what we want now is to be able to differentiate some of those lenses as write eviction and things like
okay.
that, and we don't have that information in environment. To get that information in environment, we need to simulate more stuff.
Okay. So this is other thing that I was going to say. So your testbed is essentially a virtualized machine, right? And you are running QEMU inside a VM.
No, we're running QEMU mm-hmm. in the fastest machine we have in the lab, directly on hardware.
Oh, direct on hardware?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if we can actually run 4 QEMU instances in parallel.
We've been doing that for many work weeks to save time.
Well, 4 QEMU instances in parallel doesn't help because they might
on the same hardware.
But the tracing of memory access tracing is inside QEMU.
What I understood is that you're saying that it's to accelerate the tracing because you have 4 parallel things running at the same time, so we can trace traces of 4 things at the same time.
No, I think Akshat wanted to increase the footprint.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, just because the real memory access is not does not correspond well to the memory access seen in QEMU, so yeah.
Yeah, the timing is the problem. We can certainly, multiplex the memory address ranges, but the times are an issue. Yeah, well, we have a few things to try at least, and let's see where that goes.
Okay.
And we can also meet for figuring out, what our memory traces should actually be.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about that in much detail so far, and that's actually quite important.
Yeah.
We're simulating cache, but we don't really know how that affects the memory access, specifically for things like page faults.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can talk about that after our paper club today.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, anything else?
No. I have my agenda.
So, yeah. So, Akshat, once we have that discussion, I'll have Lewis email you or Ricardo email you with what we came up with, and then you can give us your feedback.
Sure.
Okay, great. All right, so we meet... next week then?
Yep.
Same time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. All right, okay. Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, we didn't realize the problem.
Yeah, it's only when you start talking about it this way that you realize these problems. It's yeah, always like that. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if you have time to talk about the traits stuff.
Yeah, we should talk about that too, maybe yeah. In the evening.
Well, I was thinking that probably, you know, we should get involved everybody in the lab, because probably, for instance, for George, probably those traces also, by adding just small information, will also work for some of his products, I don't know.
Right, so we'll certainly discuss the possibility of doing a new round of trace collection. I'll have to convince Eric.
Yes.
But since he's done it before for us, he might agree to do it again, as long as we do not eat up too much of his disk space. He might be willing to.
Yeah, actually, about that, what I was thinking is that one thing we can do is to export one file system on the new machine and we load that directly instead of occupying their, or you know, using their disk.
Yeah, or we could just do nightly copy and delete. Could do that.
That's true.
Depending on how easy it is to connect to NFS volume on their machine.
Yeah.
It may or may not be, they may or may not want us to do that.
Okay.
Yeah, but we can look at all these possibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the more difficult part is to convince Eric to do this again, because he allowed us to collect traces, and when we decided to start tracing, we had a lot of discussion as to what we should trace and what was feasible and what was not. One of the issues then was space. And how much space the traces were taking, which, you know, because collecting everything was taking too much space, and we didn't have access to so much space at that time, we sort of cut back on some tracing.
That's what I'm saying. And now we have space, so probably we can, if we eliminate that issue, we could have much better traces.
Right.
Because, you know, what is a shame is that those are really nice traces right now, but I cannot use them because they don't have the information I need. You know, and I would love to have that actually.
Well, for certain kinds of work, it's not a problem. I mean, you can use those traces because if you want to, let's say, do working set analysis or things like that, that's good enough.
That's true, but for instance, what I need in the VMware project is the number of outstanding IOs that I have at any given time, right? So it goes up now, the number of outstanding IOs. So for that, I need the issues and the completions for all requests, right? And we don't have that.
But in the completion, right. Well, let's talk about that later.
Okay.
I need to do some other things.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Hey Jason, maybe a bit too late for you, but if you're ready, we can go.
Yeah.
All right. See you downstairs.